little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry. Be happy.
Support for KMXT comes from Henry's Great Alaskan Restaurant, serving gourmet salads, sandwiches, seafood, steaks, and pastas. Takeout always welcome at henrys.mobilebites.com or by calling 907-486-8844.
It's 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill, where it's overcast, 46 degrees, light rain and mist. And we're looking for more rain, mainly after 1 p.m.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Using words such as depravity and bizarre, Pentagon spokesman John Kirby appears to issue his most emotional condemnation yet of Russian President Vladimir Putin's actions in Ukraine.
Let's just call it what it is BS. That this is about Nazism in Ukraine, and it's about protecting Russians in Ukraine, and it's about defending Russian national interests when none of them were threatened by Ukraine.
Kirby speaking within hours of a senior U.S. defense official saying Russian forces are trying to advance on three separate fronts in eastern Ukraine in an attempt to encircle a large part of the Ukrainian military. But as NPR's Greg Myrie reports, Ukrainians are putting up tough resistance and have been largely holding their ground.
The U.S. official describes the Russian effort in eastern Ukraine as slow, uneven, and fairly plodding. The U.S. also assesses that the Russians are several days behind where they hope to be at this point. Ukrainian troops continue to block or even push back Russian forces in some areas. And in places where the Russians are making limited advances, they appear wary of getting separated from their supply lines, a problem that's repeatedly plagued them. While substantial fighting takes place daily in eastern Ukraine, the U.S. believes Russia is still setting conditions for a larger offensive yet to come. Greg Myrie, NPR News, Washington.
Amid more reports of deadly violence in Afghanistan today, a former Afghan general says he and many other former politicians and members of the Afghan military are preparing to launch military operations against the Taliban. Lieutenant General Sami Sadat, who had just taken over command of Afghan special forces when the government collapsed last August, told the BBC that they've put up with more than 8 months of increasingly harsh Taliban rule.
Every day I see in my phone getting hundreds of messages from young girls, young boys, from doctors and officers, and says we've been tortured, we've been oppressed, we've been disrespected, and what are you going to do about it?
That's Sadat speaking to the BBC. It's now been 30 years since riots in Los Angeles left more than 50 people dead, thousands injured. Here's NPR's Sandhya Dirks.
3 decades ago, the 4 police officers who savagely beat Rodney King were acquitted, and L.A. erupted in protest and violence. Here's UCLA historian Robin D.G. Kelly.
It was a rebellion against the beating of Rodney King, captured on video, and a collective memory of all the other people who were beaten but were never caught on camera.
Koreatown was heavily hit in 92. Korean Americans mark today as Sai-i-gu. Across Los Angeles, anniversary events are planned, and while there has been healing, many point out the reasons for the uprising. Police violence are very much still with us.
It's NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
People in Chignik and Kodiak Island may have felt a jolt on Wednesday evening. According to the Alaska Earthquake Center, a 5.2 earthquake was reported in the Aleutians that seismologists suspect was an aftershock of last summer's megaquake. KMXT's Dylan Simard has this report.
At 7:33 p.m. on Wednesday evening, the Alaska Earthquake Center detected a magnitude 5.2 earthquake. No tsunami warning was generated. The quake 73 miles east of Chignik occurred only 90 miles away from the epicenter of an 8.2 magnitude quake from last July. Alaska Earthquake Center senior scientist Natalia Rupert says seismologists suspect they were linked.
When we have major large earthquakes, they rupture a certain fault, but then they perturb much larger area, and the stress over a much larger area changes. So the changes in the stress may trigger earthquakes on other different faults, not the same fault as the main shock. So it's, we still call it an aftershock, since it probably would have not happened without the 8.2 earthquake.
She says that this likely won't be the last aftershock from the July 29th of 2021 earthquake. Large seismic events can generate aftershocks that don't go off for more than a year after the fact.
We definitely expect more aftershocks in that region. We cannot exactly predict when and how large they will be, but we will definitely see more aftershocks for a few more months.
The state's Earthquake Center says at least seven people reported feeling Wednesday's 5.2 quake. No damage was reported during the quake, and it was felt as far away as Anchorage, some 400 miles away. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
Governor Mike Dunleavy says he's optimistic the legislative session will end on time and approve a substantial permanent fund dividend. At a press conference yesterday, he said inflation and rising oil prices make the PFD especially vital this year.
In my discussions with legislators this year, they see the urgency and the need to make sure that we get a PFD that's pretty substantial.
Dunleavy has advocated for a PFD of at least $3,700. Earlier this month, the House sent a $7.7 billion budget to the Senate. It proposes a $1,300 energy credit and a PFD of around $1,250. At a media briefing yesterday afternoon, House Speaker Louise Stutz, a Republican from Kodiak, said she's happy with that proposal.
Well, that's $2,500. That's nothing to sneeze at. And at the same time, we're paying the state's bills. We're paying the oil tax credits that we owe up to date. We're taking care of some of the deferred maintenance. We're putting money in our savings account. We're doing a good job for the people of this state.
But the governor thinks the legislature can save money and give Alaskans a larger PFD. The state has projected a $3.4 billion surplus this year and next year, and Dunleavy wants to save some of that money.
We don't know what the volatility in oil may do. As we always say, we know that oil will go up. We don't know when. And we know it'll go down. We don't know when. So being able to bank some of this windfall that we have now, I think most legislators that we've talked to think it's a good idea.
The governor says he's also optimistic about the Alaska Reads Act, which would create statewide reading policies for kindergarten through third grade. The Senate approved it earlier this month. He's also hopeful lawmakers will pass public safety bills related to sexual assault and victim protection that he introduced in February. The legislative session is set to end on May 18th. A Juneau mental health organization is helping people formerly involved in the justice system get housing, and the program is working. As KTOO's Lindsay Brolini reports, getting these people in secure housing is important for reducing recidivism and having a safe community.
Nathan Block works with people before they are released from incarceration to develop a plan once they are out so they can re-enter society successfully. One of the big challenges is housing. People don't want to rent to them because of their background. One way to increase housing for justice-involved people is to create housing specifically for them, and there are currently some places in Juneau that do that. But Block says that also has its problems sometimes. Some former inmates have a stigma with those houses and don't want to stay in a place where they think people aren't trying to work on themselves. When it comes to employment, there are fidelity bonds available. Those lower the risks and financial burden on employers. Block would like to see a similar program for housing, too.
So then landlords who most likely in the past haven't wanted to be a part of the voucher programs will see that then they're assured, so that if there ever is a situation, they don't have to spend a lot of their own personal money updating the facility or the apartment, et cetera, for the next person.
When people are released, Block says that sometimes a person will have a big family in town who they can rely on, but that's not common. Sometimes they are put up in hotels, which he says doesn't really solve anything. And they can't just look on Facebook or Craigslist for a place. It's next to impossible for them to find housing that way. Block says that solving the housing problem for justice-involved people is going to require effort not just from those people, but from the community, too.
Most people who are involved in the justice system don't just wake up in the morning and say, what crimes can I commit today? It's a result of untreated trauma. It's a result of a history of colonialism. And it's also a result of a community who doesn't want to help them.
Block has personal experience with incarceration, mental health, and substance use. But he went through a program that helps people in his situation go to college, and it changed his life. He got his bachelor's and master's, and now he's helping other justice-involved people better their own lives, like Angel Munoz. After doing 7.5 years at Lemon Creek Correctional Center in Juneau, Munoz was living in a situation he didn't want to be in. He heard about the reentry program when he was going to see his parole officer and decided to check it out. At first, progress felt slow, like nothing was happening.
But you got to want to help yourself before they can help you, you know what I mean? So they're not going to do all the work for you. They want you to do some of the work.
And he did the work, going to counseling, AA, and working 2 jobs. And then they secured him a spot at the Breakwater Inn. But the funding for it ran out, and Munoz started panicking.
I didn't know what to do. I felt like I was hopeless. I didn't have control of my life. And I go, what? I'm doing this just to get to back where I was starting? I go, no.
Eventually, he got housing at St. Vincent de Paul. The reentry program paid for a few months there so he could save his paychecks up for a deposit on an apartment. And now he has an apartment he's been in for about 4 months now. He did the work to make his life better for his son, so he could start fresh and have a place for him.
Because I do love him, and I need to show him that I love him by doing all this. Because, you know, if I tell him I love him, and I'm going back to jail, that's not showing him I love him. That's telling him I really don't care, you know?
Munoz says that people who were in his position should all go through the reentry program. He says it isn't easy, but if they put in the work and do everything honestly, something will work out. He says he's grateful for all the people who helped him get where he is today and didn't give up on him. People who saw him as a person who deserved a second chance. In Juneau, I'm Lindsay Brolini.
Port communities in southeast Alaska are seeing the return of cruise ships this week as the Norwegian Bliss made the inaugural voyage of the season. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, tour operators and residents in Ketchikan say they're glad to see some fresh faces in town.
Bagpipes greeted the first passengers of the 2022 cruise season in Ketchikan as they stepped off the megaship Norwegian Bliss. Visitors filed inside Ward Cove's former pulp mill warehouse that's now been restyled as a cruise terminal. Inside, Erica DeMonte was waiting for a kayak trip to the Tatoosh Islands after disembarking from the Bliss. Though the ship is carrying just about 2,000 people, about half of its capacity, the Vancouver, BC resident says the ship doesn't feel like it.
I'm really surprised at how full it is. It's really crowded. I guess everyone's looking forward to, like, going on cruises again.
City officials here in Ketchikan say they're expecting early season ships to bring about 30 to 50% of their typical capacity, though passenger numbers are expected to rise to nearly 90% by the peak of the summer. Allen Marine sales manager Eric Scheppner says the slow start is a bit of a blessing in disguise. He says the tour company had to lay off much of its staff during the pandemic.
I have a lot of new crew, so I have a lot of them with me here today, and it's a good way to train them up and not be too crazy yet until next week. So,
many Ketchikan residents seem to be jazzed about the return of large ships, too. Bob Thomas tells me from outside a local grocery store that he's glad tourists are returning to Ketchikan, which relies on visitors to fuel much of the economy.
We need the revenue. You know, I've been here all my life, and I'm glad to see him come back.
Outside the Sourdough Bar, resident Aaron Scholl says it's a good time to be looking for work.
I think wages are up for everybody around here too this year. Lack of employees still, so if you guys need a job, show up. Come on out and get it.
Though it's not clear how full the ships will be, the Ketchikan Visitors Bureau is projecting a record 637 port calls by 48 ships this year. That's about six times as many port calls as last year, and it's about 12% more than 2019. That was a record-setting season with nearly 1.2 million passengers. Alaska's cruise season is scheduled to run through October 21st when the last cruise ship ties up for the year in Ketchikan. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Alaska's biggest April wildfire in 25 years might be done burning. KYUK's Olivia Eberts reports damage to the permafrost from the large tundra fire is unlikely, but the local ecosystem could see some signs of disruption.
The fire began burning on April 16th near the communities of Guishluk, Bethel, and Apakiak. The fire was around 650 acres on the first day, and it grew to more than 10,000 acres over the course of 12 days. Now, the Guishluk fire has mostly burned out, leaving charred tundra in its place. That's according to the Alaska Division of Forestry. DOF pilot and firefighter Matt Snyder flew the fire on Tuesday and took infrared video showing that the fire had died down considerably.
The infrared is showing white hot, and that's showing the solar radiation on the fire, not actual heat.
Snyder's video showed that there was no more smoke emitting from the fire. But Division of Forestry spokesperson Cale Casey said that doesn't mean they can consider the fire completely extinguished just yet.
We don't want to play the game of calling it out. We know that it's not moving. We know that it has no heat showing. But just like every other wildfire, is there a tiny bit of heat that might linger a few more days? Sure, absolutely. That's why we're going to end up keeping an eye on it in the next couple days and monitor status.
Climate specialist Rick Toman said that the fire is the largest April wildfire in Alaska in 25 years. Spring tundra fires in general are common. When the winter snow melts and exposes the brown vegetation on the tundra, that vegetation can quickly dry and ignite, sparking fires that can spread far and wide. But a large tundra fire this early, according to Toman, is abnormal. That's because normally in April there's more snowpack that prevents fire from starting or spreading. Tundra scientist J.J. Frost watched the Division of Forestry's flyover video. Frost says he has worked often in the YK Delta over the years. He says it's possible to see if there's damage occurring from videos like these, but he didn't see any. Frost says tundra fires are sometimes concerning because they can cause damage to the permafrost, but in the early spring, they don't burn deep enough to melt it. Frost is concerned about something else, however.
Lichens are not... they're not tolerant of fire really at all.
He says lichens take a long time to grow back. He says that can be a problem for animals who graze on lichen.
Potential Mulchatna herd might utilize that area. And so if those lichens are gone, that is a habitat impact for caribou.
It's been on a sharp downward trend since the mid-90s, hitting a low point in 2021. Hunting for the species has been extremely limited since, and it closed entirely last year. But Frost says early season tundra fires do offer some regeneration for non-lichen plants.
That burn material is releasing nutrients that are going to be available for plants to take up later on in the summer and potentially, in essence, fertilize them.
Frost said we could see a lush tundra bloom in the early summer in the area where the fire burned. In Bethel, I'm Olivia Eberts.
Celebrate Public Radio in Kodiak with Spring Twang, Friday and Saturday, April 29th and 30th. Kick up your heels and kick the winter off your boots with Ellamy Tiller in the Twang and Crooked Island at Tony's Bar. The music starts at 9 p.m. and goes until the wee hours of the morning. Tickets are available at kmxt.org or at the door.
If you want me to stay, I'll be around.
Does your dog listen to KMXT Kodiak? Well, he doesn't have much choice, does he? But does he know that neither of you contribute to your local public radio? He probably does. I bet he's giving you that look right now. Dogs are loyal, faithful, and rather judgmental companions. Ease your dog's troubled mind. Pledge support to your local public radio station right now. Here's how. Call 486-3181 or donate online at kmxt.org.
Now I wanna be your child.
Insight Daily Radio. Author, humorist, and radio personality Garrison Keillor has been a fixture in popular culture since the 1970s. With more than 30 best-selling books and his Prairie Home Companion radio program. And he has a new book entitled Boomtown, a Lake Wobegon novel. We caught up with Garrison to chat about his new book and the creative journey that continues to bring Lake Wobegon to life.
I have, even after I thought I had finished the novel, I was using stories from it in performance, and then I would go back and change it. I made the last changes in the novel. I think they were the last because it's coming out soon. I made them just a few weeks ago, and that's where the real fun in writing is, not in the first draft or the second or the third, but in the additions that you come up with. My principle is nothing is ever finished, so don't even imagine that it is. But in the last stages of revision and addition, you enjoy it the most, adding to it at the very end.
That's author and humorist Garrison Keillor, whose new book, Boomtown, a Lake Wobegon novel, has just been released and is now available wherever books are sold. Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Today is Friday. It is the 29th day of April, the year 2022. Sun rose at 6:22 this morning. It will set again at 9:53 tonight. That will give us 15 hours and 31 minutes of daylight. A gain of 4 minutes and 42 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 69 degrees. That was set in 2005. And our record low was 22, set in 1937. Currently 46 degrees here up on Burrow Hill. Looks like 44 degrees out at the airport. They are still calling for rain today, mainly after 1 p.m. High near 45. Southeast winds gusting as high as 30 today. For tonight, more rain, could be heavy at times, maybe between 3/4 to 1 inch overnight. Southeast winds continuing, gusting to 40 tonight. And for tomorrow, rain, which could be heavy at times, high near 43, east winds to 30, gusting to 40. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 2:18 this afternoon. That will be a 7.5-foot tide. Followed by a low tide at 8:01 p.m. That will be 8/10 of a foot. Your high tide for the middle of the night will be at 2:14 a.m. and be 9 feet. And our morning low tide here on the east side will be at 8:42 tomorrow morning and be minus 9/10 of a foot. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 2:48 this afternoon. That will be 13.2 feet in Larsen Bay. Followed by a low tide at 8:43 this evening of 1 foot. Your middle-of-the-night high tide will be at 2:45 a.m. and be 15.1 feet. And your low tide for Larsen Bay tomorrow morning will be at 9:17 a.m. and be minus 1.6 feet. Mariners, be aware, we have a gale warning for tonight and Saturday from Marmot Island to Sitkanek, Kodiak's east side. For tonight, southeast 35 and seas to 12 feet. For tomorrow, south 20, becoming northwest in the afternoon, north of Dangerous Cape, southeast 35 and seas to 12 feet. And for Saturday night, northwest 35, seas to 14 feet, coming up to 18 feet on Sunday. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through Saturday. East 25 today in the Shelikof, seas to 7 feet. For tonight, east 30, seas coming up to 8 feet. And for tomorrow, east 30, seas to 8 feet, building to 10 feet tomorrow night, with winds coming up to northeast 35 tomorrow night in the Shelikov. The senior citizens of Kodiak will be meeting this afternoon at 1 p.m., just a little over a half hour. That meeting will happen in the multipurpose room of the Senior Center. The public is invited to attend. For more information, contact the Senior Center at 486-6181. Next Thursday, the Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association will be having their annual meeting. That's Thursday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the KRAA offices. This meeting of the Aquaculture Association is open to members of the public. Board election results and hatcheries research and monitoring program overviews and plans will be presented, along with the recap of the KRAA annual report for 2021. The meeting will be both in person and via Zoom. In person, it will be at the KRAA offices at 104 Center Avenue, Suite 205. If you'd like to attend via Zoom, contact KRAA by phone. Their number is 907-486-6555 or email kraa@kraa.org. The library is open from 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays. The teen book clubs will be meeting on Tuesdays. That's 4 p.m. in the library's teen room. On Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m., the library hosts a Lego club. It's a drop-in program for youth after school. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. The Kodiak Fish and Game Advisory Committee is having a meeting. Oh, no, they met yesterday. I hope it was successful. The Assembly is having a special meeting on Monday. That will be happening at 6 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. This meeting was called by the mayor. Agenda items are only one: consideration of matters in the call for the special meeting, which involves discussion of borough obligations in a tax matter. For more information, contact the clerk's office at 907-486-9310. And there will be a Board of Education work session on Monday, immediately followed by a special meeting. That's happening Monday, May 2nd, 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room. That's F-140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will also be streamed through BlueJeans. Login information is posted under the Kodiak Island Borough School District's website, which is at www.kibsd.org, under the Board of Education tab. For more information, contact Bianca Clark, the Secretary of the Board of Education, at 907-486-7566. And Isle Bells is having their 11th annual Spring Ring. That's happening next Sunday, May 1st, 3 p.m. in the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. $15 general admission is all. Finally, a reminder to go and see Waterhaul, commercial fishing-themed art exhibit created by Homer artist Katie Birch and produced by the Kodiak Maritime Museum. It can be viewed at the Kodiak Island Brewery through May of 2022. Katie has fished her set net site at Ugashik Bay and Bristol Bay for decades, and the 11 pieces in this special show use objects and materials familiar to commercial fishermen to explore work, community, loss, and the natural world. For more information, call the Maritime Museum at 486-0384.
Do you need to see a doctor, dentist, or optometrist? Arctic Care is offering no-cost medical, dental, optometry, and veterinary services to anyone in the Kodiak community May 4th through May 13th. To learn more about the services available through Arctic Care, the location of services, and to schedule an appointment, go to kodiakhealthcare.org or call 907-486-9870. Arctic Care 2022 is a no-cost healthcare service program provided by the United States Department of Defense Arctic Care Innovative Readiness Training Program in partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the April 29th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Forman. We have now moved into the twilight zone. Well, not really. We've actually moved into that section of spring and summer where we have no more nighttime. Normally after sunset, we have civil twilight, then nautical twilight, followed by astronomical twilight, and then nighttime. During astronomical twilight, there isn't much light remaining on land, but stargazers know there is still a little leftover sunlight reflected in the sky. The best stargazing happens after astronomical twilight has begun or before it starts in the morning, in other words, during the true nighttime. We won't have true nighttime again until mid-August, so now you know why, for a few months out of the year, Kodiak is in the twilight zone. Nerd note for the week: on planets or celestial bodies like the moon where there is no atmosphere, when sunset happens, darkness descends instantly because there is no atmosphere. An atmosphere is what reflects the sunlight long after the sun has gone down below the horizon. Back here on Terra Firma, spring continues to slowly spring. Each week there are more buds on salmon berries, more green beach grass popping up, and the ubiquitous pushke is coming up. Blueberry blossoms are beautiful right now. Hopefully it'll be a good crop this year. On Friday and Saturday night, put your dancing shoes on and join KMXT at Spring Twang at Tony's Bar. Ellamy Tiller and the Twang will be playing live for the first time in a long while, and they are joined by Crooked Island, a band whose vision statement simply says, "Booties will shake." I'm pretty sure that means you'll have a bunch of fun. Get your tickets at the door or at kmxt.org. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.